Just to get into specifics, because I'm curious about the mental health component of this, palliative care is described as a multidisciplinary approach, a holistic approach at that. From your perspective, what is the role of a psychologist or counselors within this multidisciplinary team?
Okay, so if we've talked about psychological distress and psychological pain, so obviously that is the place where you sit with clients, and when they come, when it's little children, often they work with this knowledge of I'm dying differently than adults. So helping them deal and accept and work and question and even get angry at what's happening in a way that's also holding them. And also sitting with parents through the, because the moment the diagnosis is made, even in a neonatal unit, when parents hear that their little child will always need dialysis or they might need surgeries for the rest of their lives, that changes their whole dream, their whole story they made up for what their life would look like. So it's sitting with that loss and grief and bereavement, and then adjustment and reintegrating into what's normal for us now. But the psychologist, what I found, and as a counselor, a big role that I also play is in communication, because we speak of a multidisciplinary team, it means not only medical professionals. It's us as psychological professionals, but also it might include, it always includes the family and the patient if they are old enough. So communication needs to be continuous. It needs to be in a way that's understandable for those that are not medical professionals. So I often also play a role of sitting with the clients and re-explaining what the doctor said in over and over until they understand, checking that they understand, really understand what the doctor said, talking about what's going to happen, what this new intervention might be, why we are considering changing the medication, because it's an ever-changing environment as well, the journey, the trajectory of a client's illness. Because people are so unique, people respond to pain medicine or medication in different ways. They have to be stopped or it might need to be increased. They have symptoms that never showed before, and doctors need to mitigate all of this the whole time, and they often don't have the luxury of time to sit with a family and just talk through all of the uncertainties and why this is changing again. And I find myself as fulfilling that almost like a translator, mediator role. And also then vice versa, doing it what's the values, the hopes, the dreams, the wishes for this family of what they want to happen, what's their decisions, and giving that over to the medical team so that the medical team understand this is where the family is coming from. This is their concern. Because sometimes the decision might be no more interventions, but then the family just needs one more test for themselves. So the doctors might know this one more test won't give us any results that is useful, but if this is what this family needs to get closure, then this is within our holistic view what we need to do. So it's that also communicating between all of the team members is a big role of the psychological professional.
I see. Well, you did mention your involvement as a mediator and communicator, and also you noted that the interventions of palliative care are guided by the patient's and family's wishes and priorities and values. Can you give an example of how this client-centered approach shapes the psychological support you provide?
Just to mention one practical example, we had at the hospital I'm working with, the family had a tiny baby of 3 weeks old that was in NICU from the very start, from birth. So this little boy has never left the hospital. The family has been there all the time. And the decision was made that there will be only palliative care, no interventions anymore, because the condition wasn't such that the baby would survive. And what that family needed was the elders to come. And there was some cultural, traditional, religious practices that need to be done. Sometimes, in some cases, it's a naming ceremony or a baptism. And then in a neonatal ICU, we know often only the parents are allowed. So, but then my role would be to talk with the medical team to see how we can facilitate this naming ceremony for this baby, with more people coming, like the elders. What's the minimum amount of people that we can ask to hold this for this family, to have their values, their beliefs, what they feel is important culturally and religiously, to accommodate for that. So, it's really about listening to what people need and then translating it to how can we make that happen for you in a way that's also not harming this child physically, in a way that the doctors will also feel, yes, this is okay. That's just one example.
Interesting, because as you explain, more clarification comes my way, because I previously said I was trying to reconcile the difference between palliative care and hospice care, which is a lot of misconceptions there. But as you explained that one of the patients was younger and, well, relatively a baby, because yes, in my mind it was just for old people, but I understand
yes,
now.
Yes, no, it's for, it's like we... helping a young boy of 15 who was diagnosed, he was dying. Mm-hmm. And their the wishes for the family and him was to go back to the Eastern Cape, to a rural area. So my role, and together then with a social worker and the people on that side in the Eastern Cape, was how do we make sure that there is the medical resources and the support needed near enough for them. There is the psychosocial support. There is whatever this family needs to go home, for this boy to go home to his village, to die in a way that this family chose. This is how they want to do it. So it's really, that's why I say it's over several systems. It's over multiple parts of human being human. It's all encompassing, it's a blanket.
Yes. The more I listen, the more I'm realizing this is a very important sector for healthcare. With that being said, what advice would you give to a psychology student or a practitioner who wants to start their journey in this vital area of healthcare?
So it is still a developing field. It's sort of pushing away from the old idea of that we think it's just geriatric old people dying. So it's an evolving, changing, almost budding field. There are not many, it's not really taught in psychological undergrad studies as such. I think the nearest one gets to it is maybe a bit of grief and bereavement, but it really touches on palliative grief and bereavement. But there are, UCT at the moment has a postgraduate diploma in palliative care, which is amazing. It's not only for medical professionals, it's also for social workers, psychological workers. And there's always also been some parents of kids that have passed away that have done that course to understand and to champion and advocate for this field. Palliative Care for Children South Africa, PATCH, they also have an excellent training platform with different online short courses. All of these are CPD accredited and they are very affordable, so you can build up your expertise by doing a small course. PALPRAC is also there, PATCH, PEDSPAL, all these South African organizations have regular workshops on different kinds of pediatric care, pediatric palliative care, adult palliative care. So if anyone would like more information, they are welcome to look for PATCH or PALPRAC or PEDSPAL on the web, or they can call me. I will always share whatever I know.
Yes. Hopefully this will reach many potential palliative care practitioners. And obviously, as you just mentioned, they can reach out to you for more information. But that brings us to the end of our time today. If there's one key message we can learn from this, is that we need to redefine what palliative care means. It's not just end of life care. It's an extra layer of holistic team-based support that should begin at the time of diagnosis for any life-limiting illness, working right alongside curative treatment. It's about placing the patient and their family at the center of care, honoring their wishes and focusing relentlessly on their quality of life, wherever it may be, home, Eastern Cape, anywhere. Yes, I'd like to thank you, Susan, for taking us through your work and discussing mental health as a part of palliative care. But before we leave, do you have any parting remarks for our listeners?
Oh, well, Martin, you summarized it so well. I can never beat that. So I will just say, if your heart is holistic care, and if your heart is really making a difference for people, I haven't even mentioned the statistics of what the need is for palliative care and how we know that the disease burden for children, I'm only speaking about children, but the disease burden for people in sub-Saharan Africa, and it's frightening to know how many children are diagnosed with life-threatening and life-limiting conditions, and their families, and they have to suffer because there's not an extra blanket of care to help them navigate this journey. So there's definitely more counselors, more psychologists, more psychosocial support workers needed in helping families navigate this very, very difficult part of being human.
Hopefully this podcast helps to inform others and hopefully broaden the care brought to these children and across the board. Well, it's been lovely having you on here, Susan. I wish you all the best going forward. And to everyone listening in, this was the CISA Health Psychology Division podcast. Until the next time, bye-bye.